Today's daf is Samach Gimel. Start with Refuah Shlema for the week. Or the Panina Baruch Afrida Yelmer Batchaya Dafna Chaya Batzari Lana Mira Batina Chana Michal Bafrida Hinda Chana Leah Bafredel David Avram Ben Miriam Chaya Naomi Dvora Bat Shulami Bili Loi Nishmat Yosef Ben Tzvi Akoin Verachel Vaoz Avram Shuman Ben Elezer Yitzchak Halevi Bechana. We're going to start at the two dots at the bottom of Samach Bet Amud Bet. Okay, we're having continuous discussions about what was specified in the sale, and therefore what was included in what was specified. You know, depending on what kind of a statement you make or write into the shtar, what the implications of your actions are, of the words you write in the shtar, what it means, what is included in the sale, what isn't included. Okay, I'm a rabbi. Palga de'ili ba'ara, palga. If you say, I'm giving you my half of the land, okay, so that means that if you have let's say you're giving someone, you share a property with someone else, and you're giving, I don't think it matters whether you're giving the other party or you're giving some other person, you're selling them your part of the land. Okay, palga often means half, it also means part. So it's always tough to know exactly what the intention is. So since he says here, basically it's like saying my half of the land. So therefore, the person gets palga. He gets that half. But if you say palga ba'ara di'itle, if you say I'm giving you half of the land that I have, then that means riva, and he only gets a quarter because you're saying, right? Depending on how you word it,
my half of the land,
right? My half of the land versus half of my land. Okay. So this seems quite simple. However, Abaye says, okay, so this was Rabba. Remember Rabba and Abaye's connection. Abaye was the adopted son of Rabba. Rabba was his uncle, and he adopted him. And Abaye often questions him. So Amar le Abaye, Maishna hachi u Maishna hachi. What's really the difference? Because in theory, you could still say that palga ba'ara di'itli, right, part of the land that I have, half of the land that I have could still mean half of this big piece of land that I have half of it. In other words, in theory, you could explain it that way also. Ishtik, Rabba doesn't answer him. Okay, now, why did I specifically say think of the relationship between them? Because sometimes kids ask nitpicky questions and the parents don't always respond to them, right? It's a little different if a regular student was asking, possibly, okay? Not necessarily, but anyway, he was silent. So Amar Abaye, Ana Savre Midi Ishti Kibule Kabla. I assumed that since he didn't answer me, he actually agreed with me and thought that I was right. Vilohi, however, it's not the case. Because Chazina, Abaye himself says it's not the case. Because Chazina, I saw, right? Ana at the end of a word always means ani. So Chazina is I saw Hanushtare, Vishtarot, the Dinafke Mibemar, that came out of the house of Mar, which is what he calls Rabbah. Vikati behu hachi, and it's said in these shtarot like this: palga di'itli ba'ara palga, and palga ba'ara di'itli riva. And he saw basically the Rabbah had paskin in all sorts of cases that if you say half of the land, that my half of the land, then it means you get half, and if you say half of the land that I have, then you only get a quarter of the property. So therefore, he realized that he was wrong in assuming why Rabba was silent.
Those were after this discussion, presumably?
Ah, say a fit. So I was thinking that also. But just because he found these shtarot, maybe they were from before Abaye asked his question. But I assume from the fact that Abaye is saying this that it must have been after, because otherwise it wouldn't be a great proof. The Amar Rabba, now we're going to have a very similar structure, except that this time there's going to be something else that's unclear. Okay? In other words, it's not going to be unclear. There's going to be something else that was misunderstood. And that's what do we have here? We had a case where Abaye asked Rabba a question, and then Rabba's silence was confusing to people, or was confusing to Abaye, caused some, you know, him to think of the wrong thing. Here we're going to see that something else was confusing to people. The Amar Rabba, but it's again going to be Abaye and Rabba in the same type of question. Amar Rabba, Meitzar ara demine palga. If you say that the boundary, let's say I give you a piece of land and I say on the boundary of this side is so-and-so, it's not the boundary of that side is so-and-so, it's on the boundary of that side is so-and-so, and the meitzar ara demine and the boundary on the side that borders on my property, palga. Okay, what does that mean? It means The boundary on the other side is my property, but midway, basically, right? In other words, count half my property, and that's where the border is, meaning that I'm selling you half of my land, right? So if you measure, again, here are the three boundaries, and on this side is my property, and I say the border on this side is Palga. Okay, so the assumption is that you get half my land. That's what I was selling you. So if you say Meitzar Ara Demina Palga, the Meitzar of the land of mine is half, you know, you get half of, then Palga, then you get half. But if you say Meitzar Ara Demina Psika, then you only get Tisha Kabin. Remember what Tisha Kabin is, we said? It's the minimal amount of a field, right? The size of a field is at least a minimum of 9. So what is the case here? You said the boundary on the other side that from where I cut my property, okay, which means basically the boundary, right, from where I cut, right, from where I'm giving you some is my side, right? That side is my side where I'm cutting you a piece. So cutting or breaking or, you know, designating my property from my property, there we're assuming it doesn't mean half because you didn't say palga. Okay, even though, like I said, palga doesn't always mean half. But in general, we're going to assume here that if you said palga, you meant half. But if you say from where I'm cutting off, right, then we're assuming that you're just cutting a piece. It's almost like a slice I'm giving you of my land. Okay, and then we're going to give you the minimum, we're going to give the guy the minimum amount. So Amar Abaye, Maishna Hachi, Maishna Hachi. And Abaye says, why are you making these distinctions between palga, right? Palga is basically like saying a part, right? A part of, which is often half, but it's not necessarily half. So why are you assuming that palga and psika are different? So now, ishtik. Again, Rabba was silent. So now in this case, Abaye doesn't confuse his silence, or at least it doesn't tell us this. But what was confusing, if you notice, Abaye says, what's the difference between this and what's the difference between that? He doesn't say what he would think all of them are, right? In other words, would he think that in each case you get Tisha Kabin? Would he think that in each case you would get half? So Savar Mina, people thought from what he said, Idi Vidi Palga, that each case you would get half, that that's what he was saying. He was saying whether you say where I cut off or whether you say where I, you know, whether it was in the, you know, split, either which way, it would be 50-50. But vilohi, that's not the case. Damar aviyam rabar shlemnia, ledidi mefrashe le mineda abaye. Abaye explained personally to me that bein meitzar ara demina palga, u bein meitzar ara demina psika, whichever way you say it, I amar le ilin mitzrana, then palga. Lo amar le ilin mitzrana, tisha kabin. That really it has nothing to do with the first line you said. That first line would indicate nothing in terms of the size. Now, if it indicates nothing in terms of the size, so what do we always say? Hamotzi mechaveru alav haraya, and the guy would have to prove that it's more than tisha kabin. Okay, and he doesn't have any way to prove that. But if the person said, and here we're going to learn today about the more you add, you're obviously adding something to include more. Okay, if you're being very specific in your, and you're adding like a word of an extra additional wording, then the assumption is you're adding more. So if you say, and these are your boundaries, palga, right? And these are your, you just say the words, these are your boundaries, then, in other words, if I say, you know, I'm giving you from my land, the boundary is on the part of my land, you know, in the middle of my land, and these are your boundaries. If I say, and these are your boundaries, it must be I'm including more. And then it's going to be half. But if I don't say, these are your boundaries, then we're going to assume it's Tisha Kabin. Okay, this is actually a different nusach about this Elim Mitzrana, because it's a little confusing why exactly we would say that this indicates that he wants to give more. So the read, and Rabbeinu Baruch have a different version, which says, if the seller designates his boundaries, then he sold him half the field. But if he doesn't designate it, then he only gets Tisha Kabin, which means basically the only way, which this makes a lot more sense. That's why I wanted to explain that pshat. The only way you get half is not just because you said the words, these are your boundaries. These are your boundaries, right? According to the Rashbam, these are your boundaries is an added unnecessary thing, which means you're obviously trying to give more to the guy. Now, whether that's so clear is not so clear cut. So the other opinion of Rabbeinu Baruch and the Reed is that if you say, these are my boundaries, and you designate, you say, what does it mean, these? These means right here, right? And you say, if you measure 2 meters, you know, to there, that's your boundary. Then, if it was halfway, then you would get half, okay? But if he didn't do that, then the assumption is you get the minimum, okay? And that's maybe a better interpretation. What's the weakness of that interpretation? Well, if you designate the boundary, then it wouldn't be necessarily half. It all depends. Wherever you designate your boundary is where the boundary is. So the usage of the Gemara of the word half doesn't make that much sense. But you could just read it as like this. The only way you're going to get half is if you designated the boundary, but do you get the midway? And then you would get half. Okay? In other words, the point is, if he doesn't designate any boundary, he just says, right, what's this case? He's telling you, right, Reuben lives on this side, Shimon lives on this side, right, that's the border on that side, Levi's the border on the other side, and my property is the border of the other side, wherever we're splitting it, okay, wherever that line is. So if you say wherever that line is, we're going to assume minimal, Tishah Kavim. But if you say, and the border on the other side is my property, X amount of meters, obviously no one's really measuring here, so you'd have to designate it somehow, a line within your property. If you did that, that's the only way the guy could get half your property, is if you designated that line midway. And obviously, according to this interpretation, it means wherever you designate the line. In other words, it's not necessarily only going to always end up as half. It's wherever you designated that line, that's where the boundary is going to be. But if you didn't designate, we're going to assume minimal, Tishah Kavim. Okay? Pshita, it's obvious that Amar, if he says, Yachlok b'nichse ploni, palga. Okay, you say, we're going to, I'm going to split my property with so-and-so. Okay, I'm going to split my nechasim, whatever it might be, palga. Then you get palga. But if you say, tshnu chelek leploni b'nechasai, my. But if you say, give so-and-so a part of my property, right? If you say the word yachlok, split my property, it means split it 50-50. But if you say, give him a part of my property, what do you mean when you say that? When you say give him a part, do you mean to split 50-50, or do you mean just a part? It's very similar. So Amar Ravina Bar Kisi, Tashma, let's learn from here. The Braita says, Ha'omer tnu chelek leploni bibor. If you say give, okay, the exact wording of the question of ours, right? Give ploni a portion of my bor. Okay, there's a machloka whether we're talking about a bor of water, a water cistern, or we're talking about a bor of wine, okay, like a wine vat. So it doesn't really matter which one we're using. It just happens to be a machloket about what the actual case is. If you say tnu chelek leploni bebor sumcha somer ein pachot miravia, you get minimum, right? The minimum you get is a quarter. You can't give the guy less than a quarter. The assumption is tnu chelek means a quarter. Okay, so that's the answer to our question. We don't need to go on the Braita, but we're going to go on because the Gemara brought it. But that's already our answer to our question. So if you say, Yachlok ploni b'nechasai, that means split 50-50. If you say, give a part, right, a portion is a quarter. Okay, but now we're going to say, if you said, Shnu chelek leploni bebor lechavit, for his barrel, then ein pachot mishminit. If you specifically said what the purpose of what you were giving him a portion for, what you were giving him this portion for, then it's going to change depending on what he wants. If he wants it for his chavit, then we're going to give him only an eighth. Likdeira, if he wants it for his pot, ein pachot mi achad mishtemesre. Litafiach, for his cup, ein pachot mishishasar. Then it's 1/16, okay? So if you get very specific, depending on what the specific thing you're talking about is, then we can assume that you're giving a minimum amount. It's actually interesting here because maybe there was an assumption that a bor was a standard size. Because if a bor isn't a standard size, right, it's a weird kind of way of measuring. Because a 1/16 of a huge bor could be a lot more than what fills a cup, right? So a 1/16 of maybe a standard size bor, maybe they just went by the standard. I don't know. I found it hard to believe that there was such a clear standard size of Baro, right? When everything's man-made, I'm sure most borot weren't a standard size, but obviously they were going by some kind of basic standard size.
It may be that they're speaking more proportionally than actual measurement. That is, that you have to give him the amount that he needs for the specific purpose, and each of the purposes they're saying is considerably smaller than the previous one. So they're maybe not, again, speaking in exact amounts, but saying you're giving him the amount that he needs, and if it's for a cup of water, it's a whole lot smaller than if it's to fill a barrel for his animals.
Right, except that if the boar is huge, then a 16th of the boar is going to be way more than what he needs.
I don't think they mean a 16th. They mean considerably less each time.
Uh-huh.
We've seen that before when they use a number.
You think he's just giving a...
They're giving a proportional number, meaning less and less and less and less.
Right. Except that if it were me and I were the guy who bought it, I would insist, hey, Sumchu says it, I'm gonna demand that based on his halakha.
Right, we've seen lots of temples say 200, or they say a number that
they
don't mean.
But it's the same thing that we've seen many times, which is the way they measure time is by describing an activity. And the way they measure, right? And there's clearly they had different ways of measuring than we did, and different ways of designating amounts, and you know, they didn't always do it by measuring with a tape measure, right? Like the boundaries.
No one talked about
a tape measure, right?
And Amma, you know, people have different size hands, or
right?
Arms, or
and Amma is all relative. There's whole machloket. It's an Amma, but shisha tefachim or chamesh tefachim, right?
And tefach isn't a set amount either.
Right.
So.
Exactly. So it's a whole right. All quite confusing, the measurements in the...
That's why I think it's proportional. I think it's more almost representational.
They're just trying to tell you that, right, as
a
it gets smaller...
A cup's worth is a lot less than a barrel's worth.
Right, yep. Okay. Tana Rabbanan, another case now. Ben Levi, Shemachar Sadeh Yisrael. Okay, here's another braita. A Levi sells a field to a Yisrael. V'amar lo, al minan shemasir rishon sheli. If he says, I'm selling you this property, as long as you commit to me that whenever you take your maaser rishon, right, a tenth of your property, you give it to me. Okay, now this sounds like it's a stipulation of the contract, which isn't really connected to the land, so to speak, but it's saying, I want you to, right, it's almost like a, but we'll see that eventually they're going to explain it's not exactly like that. Okay, so what does he say? What's the halacha? Maaser rishon shelo. He actually gets it. Okay? If imamar li ulibanai, he says, for me and my sons, mate yitain libanav. If he dies, then he still has to continue giving his children. If it's stipulated in the contract, not only for me, but for my children, then as time goes on, he still needs to give it to his children. Okay? The imamar lo, kol zman shasade zo biyadcha. He says, I have rights to the Maaser Rishon as long as the property's in your hands. Then here comes the loophole, okay? Then, Machara v'chazar v'lekacha ein lo alav klum. If he sells it and then he buys it back, then the guy doesn't have to give him the Maaser anymore because there was the sale in between broke the agreement. Once he sold it, he no longer had any obligations to him. So here's your loophole, right? If somebody made this agreement, again, it's, as long as he stipulated, kol zman shasadeh zo biyadcha, then if you want to get out of it, you can sell it to someone and buy it back. Okay? But now they have a basic question on this case. How could this work, that if I buy my field from a Levi, how can I sell him rights to the future maaser? Isn't this amai? Ein adam makne davar shelo ba'al olam. How can I sell him rights to something that doesn't exist right now? Okay? There's no such thing. Now, we have had machlokot about places where this might work, but we're basically going to say the maaser doesn't exist, right? The fruits don't exist, therefore the maaser doesn't exist, right? It's very up in the air. It's not ba'al olam achshav. So what do we say here? Kevan da'amar le al minat shemaaser rishon sheli shiyure shayre lemakom maaser. This isn't like a separate t'nai that he said, okay, you buy my land, but you have to commit to me that you'll give me maaser. What it means is, I'll sell you my land, but I'm leaving over, that's shiyure shayre, I'm leaving over a portion of the land that I have rights to. In other words, a tenth of the produce that grows, which is basically going to be, let's say, right, there's not... It's not exactly a designated plot, but it's saying some of the land I'm leaving for me. That basically you're going to grow your crops there, and then give me what you grow as the master. So he's basically, it's connected to the sale. It's saying, I'm not selling you the whole thing. This is like the whole question. Are you selling ba'ayin yafa or ba'ayin ra'a? Right? Are you selling everything or are you selling only part? So what are we saying here? So since he said this and it was part of the condition, he was leaving over something for himself. So that's okay. If you do that, then it's not davar shelo ba'al olam because you're keeping a part of the land.
But then the land that the person buys, he has to still take maaser rishon out of it. Why does it absolve him from taking the maaser rishon of the portion that he bought? If the other portion was never his land...
Right. It's true. I was thinking about that right now. I didn't think about it last night when I was preparing, but I was thinking about it right now that in theory, he doesn't really... If he...
Never
it's obviously not a real keeping over. It's a fictitious kind of... Obviously, the land all belongs to the other guy. Otherwise, the stuff he would plant there wouldn't even be his to take maaser from, and then it wouldn't even... It would belong to the Levi 100%. They're trying to come up... The way I view it, they're trying to come up with some in-between. It's sort of... He's keeping over rights to the produce from the land. He's kind of keeping some land. It's not exactly like he's really keeping the land to himself, because if he wanted to go plant there, the guy wouldn't let him plant there. So he doesn't really keep it, but what he's keeping is he's saying... Since this is going to be one-tenth of your land, I'm keeping this sort of, right? It's not a real keeping it. That's a weakness in this argument, that it's not exactly keeping it for himself. Yeah.
Also, it's more with the selling, buying, and selling, because if you keep it for yourself, then theoretically you can't sell something.
Right. That's also true. You can't sell something that doesn't belong to you. Right. So, yeah, I'm wondering if it's good, any good note about this, but... It's like a fictitious shiure shiure. Okay? Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, it's obviously got to be somewhat fictitious here. Okay. Maybe I'll look after class. I'm a Rish Lakish. Rish Lakish now wants to learn something from here. What does he say? Zot omeret, from here we can infer that what? Hamocher bayit lechavero va'amar lo al minat sheduta ha'elyonah sheli, duta ha'elyonah shelo. If you sell your house to a friend and say, al minat, that the upper part is for me, now there's a big machlok of what this upper duta ha'elyonah is, then he can keep it for himself. Okay, so duta ha'elyonah, first explanation is that it's talking about a roof with a parapet, we learned, right? Where it's got this 10 tefachim high thing around. Okay, so obviously it's a bit problematic because we already said that you don't sell that, right? It's not included in the sale. So what we're saying here is that you can reserve part for yourself. Okay? One second. I'm going to buy it. Right, so we're going to see in a minute, right, since we already know from the Mishnah that the Juta El Yonah would be his, what exactly is the Chiddush here? Okay, that's the first question that we're going to see. The other option is, some people say it's a row, like he keeps for himself a row on the roof that he can put things on, even though it might weaken the walls of the person's house, but he reserves himself this row of stones at the top of the house so that he can use it for his own purposes. Okay, so the point being that he can reserve something for himself when he makes a sale. That's what Rish Lakish is inferring from here. So now we're going to say, well, what's the nafkamina? Because again, especially if we say it's this roof, we know that that wasn't sold as part of the deal. So l'may hilchata, Rav Zvid amar she'im ratza lahotzi ba zizin motzi. Now, we already learned that you keep the roof. Let's say the roof has this. Assume we go with the Rashbam's pirush, that we're talking about a roof with a wall, a maaket that's 10 tefachim tall, which is its own reshut. So if you're selling the house, you're not selling that. But what else do you get to acquire here? The rights to zizin. Remember these protrusions. Now, you'd have to assume, according to the Rashbam, that we're talking about, what's the issue with the protrusions? There's a bit of an issue here, because what do the protrusions have to do with the guy downstairs? So either it means that you sold him the chatzer, in which case, then remember we had the hezek re'iyah issue, that you every time you go out on the ziz, you look out into the guy's chatzer, What's weird about that is it never talks about that he was actually selling the chatzir. Who said he sold the chatzir? So some people say, we're talking about that he sold the chatzir also, because obviously if you're selling the house, you're selling the chatzir. And that's the issue about the zizin poking out into his chatzir. But you're still, the point is, you're allowed to leave yourself the roof. And if you say, the roof obviously is going to be yours, but if you say, al menat shejuta el yonat sheli, that means you have rights to be motzi zizin. Other mefreshim say, no, we're not talking about the chatzir. The chatzir might still belong to the original guy. That's not the issue. The issue is, maybe you build a zizin, and from the zizin you want to put up like some sort of balcony. And if you do that, what's going to happen? It's going to block the light of the guy underneath. So that, in other words, the point is, you have rights to all the airspace coming out of the house, even if it might affect the other guys. And that's only if you say, Almanat, that you tell Yonai Shadi.
Okay. Are we assuming that he's somehow retaining the rights to get to the roof?
I don't think
like
so.
Walking through the house? And how do you?
No, I assume you would get out from the outside somehow. And then the question is, right, would you, your sulam, putting it in the guy's chatzer?
Right.
Right.
But that, I think, complicated to keep the roof without specifying a whole lot more.
Right. Right, but we said that was the case, that the guy gets to keep the roof.
That's what
he's
got
to figure out some way to get up there, right? So that's not what they're referring to here, though. Rav Papa Amar, Shim Ratzah Livnot Aliyah Al Gaba Boneh. Okay, so now there's two interpretations of this. What, the basic interpretation that most people say is that if the roof, if the roof broke, okay, fell, a storm came and knocked it down, you'd be allowed to rebuild it. Okay? Generally, you sell your house, but you keep the roof. But if the roof breaks, according to this interpretation, you can't rebuild the roof, the upper floor, unless you specified it. Amunat Yuta El Yonah Shali means that the whole story is mine, and if something were to happen, I could rebuild it. Now, there's a bit of a weakness, the Rashbam says, with this interpretation, because there's a case in Bava Metzia. If you look at the first wide line, where the lines are half a little bit wider, not fully wider, he quotes Perek Habayit Baliyah in Bava Metzia, that says, right before they get even wider, okay? Ditnan, you see the last in-between line, size line in the Rashbam? Ditnan, Habayit Baliyah Shel Shnayim Shenaflu. Okay, if there's a bayit and aliyah of two people, do you remember we learned this? Imamar bal aliyah lebal habayit livnot. Okay, and then it's whatever. Basically, they don't quote the whole thing, but the point is that you don't need special rights. Even if it broke apart, the upper guy is allowed to build. So here the assumption is, again, going with this interpretation, that if the upper guy's house breaks, or a roof, or whatever it is, falls apart, he can't rebuild it unless he said, in the sale, Amanat Yudutel Yonah Shavi. So how do you work that in with this Gemara in Bava Metzia, the Mishnah in Bava Metzia, which said that if it's a Bayit and Aliyah of two people, then the upper guy has rights to rebuild even if the bottom broke apart. You remember that was when it falls apart and then he can move into his house even if the bottom guy doesn't want to build, he can... Okay, so what the Rashbam says is, there's a bunch of different explanations given. His explanation is that the two cases are different. There it was when two people split a property. It was chalku. It wasn't where one person sold the other guy the property. If you sell it, then you lose your rights to rebuild. If you split it, then you retain the rights to rebuild. And that's his answer. But despite that, there's a question here, okay? It's a weakness. A different interpretation is given by the Rimigash. And he says that you get, okay, think of the way the pshat is, Shim Ratza Livnot Aliyah Al Gaba Boneh. You could build another story if you wanted, okay? So he's giving you rights to build even another story. That's what he's saying. If you say, Amanat Yuta El Yonah Shali, it means you own the airspace going up, all the way up, right? And this is actually going to connect a little bit with the next case, okay? That you basically have rights to the airspace, not only at the top level, but anything above that, and you can build more stories if you want. Now, obviously, what's the downside for the buyer? That it, right, the more you build higher, it weakens, right, it's bad for his walls. So, but that's exactly why if you stipulate, Almanat Shadutel Yonah Sheli, then you've already stipulated that from the beginning, and he's agreed to that. And that's why you get rights to do it, where you wouldn't get rights to do it if you hadn't stipulated. So there's a bit of a, today you've seen there's a lot of, first of all, since we have time, I've been going into different interpretations. But there's a lot of different interpretations of each of these things, what exactly they mean. Now the Gemara is going to say, Bishlama l'Rav Zvid, Hainu dekatani zot omeret. Ela l'Rav Papa, my zot omeret. And they end with Kasha. What's the question? Remember where we started. We brought this case of the Maser, and we said he's Shiure Shire, and he leaves over a piece of his land. Rish Lakish says, from here we can infer that if you sell a bayit l'chaveiro and you said, Almanach Yutel Yonah Shali, then you get to keep the rights of the Yutel Yonah. What does that mean? So Rav Zvi says if he wants to build Zizin, he's allowed to. So that we learn out from Rish Lakish. But what Rav Papa says, that if you want to get the airspace, or if it falls down, you can rebuild it. So they say that doesn't really come out of the Maser case. Exactly why this doesn't is a little questionable. Some of the Mefreshim say it's because there's better places we could have learned it. In other words, that halacha wouldn't be the first halacha I would derive from here, and all the more so, I derive it from other places. Okay? Why exactly is a question is not so clear-cut. But that seems to be the best explanation I found, which is there's lots of better places we can derive this from. This wouldn't have been my first choice to say, oh, from here we can learn this halacha. We can learn that halacha from lots of other places, and therefore Rav Papa is a bit of a weakness, and the Gemara ends with a kasha. It's somewhat weak. Okay, remember, there's a difference between tiyufta and kasha. Tiyufta means we've knocked him down. Kasha is we have a difficulty. We can maybe answer it, but we have a difficulty. Now we're going to have halacha Rav Zviv from Nahar Dea. The structure is going to be like this. We're going to bring his halacha. Then we're going to try to prove it from the next Mishnah. And then we're not going to be able to prove from the next Mishnah. And then we're going to continue tomorrow to try to bring another proof for what Rav Zviv says. So remember, Rav Zviv is in Amora. Okay? What? I'm sorry, not Rav Zviv. I was confused the last again. Rav Dimi. Rav Dimi's in Amora. He's going to make a comment. We're going to try to support him from Tana'idic sources. So only one today and one tomorrow. So Amar of Dimi Minahardea. Haiman demazbin le beta lechavre. Someone sells a house to a friend. Afagav de katavle. Now we've seen this before. Umka viruma. Even if he says, I'm giving you the depth and the height, sarich lemichtavle, he still needs to write to him, kane lachmi tahom ara vaad rum rikia. You still have to add the words. Now, there's a big debate about whether you need to add or you need to say this instead. In other words, do you need to write umka veruma and mitom ara ad rum rakia? And that would include what we're going to talk about that it includes, okay, if you were to say that. Or is it enough to just say the mitom ara ad rum rakia? Right? In other words, if you wouldn't need to say also umka veruma, that would be included. Or do we mean that because you use both that and that, you must be including something additional? Anyway, goes like this. If he writes umka veruma, that's not enough. He still needs to write mitom arav avrum rakia, my taima, de umka veruma bestama lokane. If you sell someone, we're going to have three options. One is you say nothing. Okay, you don't specify. You just say, I'm selling you the property. Okay? So one is you say nothing. The next is you say, umka veruma. And the third is that you say, mitahom ara ad rum rakia. Okay? Now again, whether the third is that you say both these things or just that, but either which way. So if you say nothing, okay, then what do we say? Bistama lokane. Okay, what does it mean, lokane? You don't have rights to dig, to build, okay? You don't have rights to go beyond what I've sold you. I've sold you my house. That's all you get. You want to dig a well? No. You want to build a little hut? No. You don't have rights to build in the land. Now, there's a machloket about, again, since we have time, we'll go into this. What about the seller? Is he retaining the rights to build? If I sell you a house, can I start building underneath your house? Can I dig underneath? Can I build higher? Can I, right? Do I have rights to do that? So some of the freshmen say, in fact, you do. If you sell it bistam, then you're really not selling the rights to dig or build, and the seller is allowed to. Some people say, no, the seller can't either. Okay, nobody has rights to build in that case. If you just sell it bistam without specifying. What's the nafkamina? That if the buyer did dig a well, let's say, it would belong to the seller. It would, because he never sold it to the other guy, so therefore, the seller gets deep. The seller himself can't build, but if the buyer built, it's like scoring a goal into your own goal, right? Okay. So here we have it. So what do we have? If umka veruma bistama lokani, so therefore, if you add the words umkavaruma, it must add on the next level. So ahane umkavaruma, lemikne umkavaruma. So that must, right, if stam is lo kane, then umkavaruma must give you rights for umkavaruma, which means to build or to, right, to dig or to build something higher.
Below the house or dig anywhere on the
property? Right. So it sounds, well, again, I guess it depends if you're selling the land also, okay? If you're selling the land, then it would rights to build on the land or to dig under or to build higher, okay? So then what's mitohom ara, vahani mitohom ara, vahrumakia, lemikni, bor vidut umichilaut. So what does this add? That then you would sell him the bor on your property, the dut, the cistern, and michilot, tunnels that you might have in the property. Okay, so that then comes to include, if you remember, we already learned that umkavaruma doesn't include the boar and the dut. We saw this already from the next mission, and we're going to see it in a minute. Okay, so now they're going to say, lema misayele, let's use the next mishnah as a support for what Rav Dimi said. Because what does the next mishnah say? We learned this already. Veloata boar, veloata dut, afal pisha katavlo umkavaruma. Right? It says, if you say umkavaruma, even if you write it into the contract, it still doesn't include the boar and the dut. Okay? So therefore, obviously, makes sense. Mitohom arava rubriki would be the next level. That would include the boar and dut. V'isal kadatach bistama kane. In other words, now they're just going to prove how this proves it. Because if you thought that bistama, it would be kone. Okay, what would it be kone? If you said bistama, right? Bistama was said, if you say nothing, lo kone, you don't get rights to dig or build. Then what would we say? If you said bistama is kone, then what would happen? Umkavaruma must be then adding the next level, right? Then if stama would be kone, rights to build, to dig or to build, then isagadata bistama kane, then umkavaruma lahane, then umkavaruma should include the next level, which is the borbidu. So therefore, it must be, right? Lahane umkavaruma lemikne borbidot umichilot. So what do they answer? No, you don't have to read the source that way. Why? What could you say? When it said in the Mishnah, below it abor, below it adut, afa pish katavle umkavaruma, maybe it means delo katavle, in a case where you didn't write anything. And then, right, that the Mishnah is really talking about the Stam case, and that therefore it doesn't prove anything about our case. Okay, because then they're saying the Stam case doesn't get you the boar, but then the Umkavaruma would get you the boar. Obviously, what's the problem here? It says in the Mishnah, even if you wrote him Umkavaruma. So how could you say the Mishnah was talking about where he didn't write him Umkavaruma? So what do they say? Hachi kamar, no, this is what we meant to say. This is how we read the Mishnah. Af al pisha lo katav lo, even though he didn't write umkavaruma, kemisha katav dame, it's as if he wrote it. In other words, a stam contract without writing anything is as if it includes umkavaruma, and that wouldn't include the boar and the dut. Okay? And then you would say that stam is kone, umkavaruma then would include the boar and the dut, and then this Mishnah wouldn't prove Rav Dimi. In other words, there's some way to read this Mishnah that doesn't prove Rav Dimi, in which case we can't necessarily use it as a proof for Rav Dimi. Okay? So then we'd say like this. So, hafikam, afa pishalo katavlo, kemisha katavle, dame, lemikne umkavaruma, so stam would be mikne umkavaruma, lemikne, period. Umkavaruma then, right, like I said, would be lemikne dor bor vidut umechilot. So I katav le umkavaruma kane, vi lo katav lo kane. So then if you wrote the words umkavaruma, it would be kone, the bor, and the dut. And therefore, that doesn't necessarily prove Rav Dimi. Again, this just means that there's some way to read the Mishnah that doesn't support Rav Dimi, and maybe that's the way the Mishnah is, and therefore we can't necessarily say that the Mishnah proves Rav Dimi. Tomorrow we're going to try to bring another source that proves Rav Dimi. Okay? But again, if you want to include the boar and the dude, you have to add these words, mitom ara va'ad rumrakia. Okay? There's a whole debate about whether, it's actually a question about whether you can, when he says umkavaruma, does he keep the airspace for himself? There's a whole debate, what does it mean to sell airspace or keep airspace? Yeah, is there such a thing as keeping airspace for yourself? There's a whole debate about it, whether it's just like an interesting theoretical debate. Can you sell airspace or can you retain airspace for yourself? That's even more the question. In other words, selling airspace, I can imagine. Selling the property, he gets everything. But some people say, no, maybe you can actually keep airspace for yourself. It's a whole interesting debate. Right.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
It would seem to be more relevant now than then, since we build up so much in the airplane.
Right.